Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us this afternoon is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. He is here to answer your questions about, wait for it, physical therapy. If you have an injured or aching knee, a shoulder, an elbow giving you a tough time, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or email, no, or phone, 800-348-2551. All this technology, physical therapy. Matthew Goodemote, your call's coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again today is Matthew Goodemote, a highly respected orthopedic physical therapist with over 25 years' experience. He specializes in treating back and neck pain and sports injuries and has worked with a diverse range of athletes, including pros, Olympians, Division I, and All-Americans, triathletes, elite runners, and dedicated weekend warriors. Matthew holds a diploma from the McKenzie Institute, Titleist Performance Institute certifications in golf performance, and a certification in applied functional sciences. He's also the founder of Goodemote Sports and Performance, where he works with active individuals and collaborates with local high schools to establish strength and conditioning programs designed to optimize athletic performance and reduce injury risks. You have a question for Matthew? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Oh, Matthew Goodemote, how are you? Had a little trouble getting down here today, I understand.
I did. I live in the boonies now, Ray, and there was a nice big branch on the road, so.
And there was no way, there were no turnoffs.
There's no way around.
Yeah,
no.
Well, you can't get there from here. That's okay. You made it on time, by the way. Well done. Did you break any laws?
Just a couple.
You know, they got speed cameras in Albany now.
No.
You are in deep doo-doo, buddy.
I
let me tell you something. The number here is 800-348-2551. The emails have actually been coming in since yesterday afternoon. So we will tackle some now, and then we'll go to the phones in a little bit. This email from Bob. In 2020, I had spinal surgery, which was mostly successful. Could stand, walk slowly without going numb. However, my right ankle remained numb throughout. I feel it's getting worse. I returned to my surgeon a couple of times and said his surgery's holding fine. Went to another surgeon, got the PA. He suggested physical therapy. Went twice. Now I can hardly walk. While on my back, he was working on my spine, then my upper leg and lower right leg. I am scheduled again this Friday. Is this normal before improvement?
2020 to 2025, that's a long time from surgery. So I'm not sure how connected the PT is for that surgery site. And the ankle, because there's a nerve that comes down and right below your knee, it can radiate, it splits off and it can radiate down into the ankle. So as a PT, I would check the ankle itself because that's where the main symptoms were to make sure it has anything to do with the spine. And then from there, there are occasions where we start physical therapy and we stir things up because we move things around that haven't been moved around.
Ah.
So normal, I don't know that normal is the right word. Does it happen? Yes, it does. But it should not persist in the sense of each session it should get better, not continue to be aggravating.
All right. This one's from Pedro, and thanks for putting a word in here that I will surely screw up, Pedro. I've been wrestling with lateral epicondylitis for a few months. Can you suggest some exercises, stretching, that would help alleviate it? Generally speaking, is it best to back off the exercises that engage those muscles or change the way they're engaged? For example, if I do a set of pull-ups, I noticed the feeling in my right arm. It's not painful, but it's telling me be careful. Same with curls and overhead presses. All right, what do you think?
So lateral epicondylitis is also known as tennis elbow. And
why don't you say that, Pedro? It would have been easier.
And the epicondyle is the bone that sticks off the side of your arm. So there's a few things in there. Stretching is not what I would recommend, because if it is, in fact, an inflammatory condition, usually includes some degenerative changes or some micro tearing. And so stretching those can make the tearing worse. So the solution is isometrics followed by eccentrics. If Pedro's working out a lot, they're also called negatives. So those are the safest exercises and have been proven to be the most effective to treat lateral epicondylitis.
Why do they call them negatives?
I don't know. I think just in the weight room, that's what they do. So it's when you're lowering the weight down. So if you're doing a bench press and you press up, the bringing it back down is the negative.
Okay, yeah.
And that's also called the eccentric. So, and the other part is that because he mentioned the pull-ups, there's a condition where the fascia up in the neck and shoulder can also lead to discomfort down in the elbow area. So it's possible that he would have to address the whole upper extremity, not just the elbow. Mm-hmm. So it's really best to get a PT to look at
Fair
that
enough.
To make sure. Yeah.
All right. This is from Bill, and he says, I'll try to be concise. 60-year-old male, moderately active, pain deep in right glute, radiates to deep hamstring muscle, sometimes outside of calf, using cruise control, mitigates onset and severity. Now, the subject heading I probably should have said is leg pain while driving long distance. The pain disappears immediately once I get out and walk around for a couple minutes. It feels like I've stretched the leg. Extended description. And Bill, it's not that extended. I'll read it. When I drive for more than about an hour or so steadily, I developed what feels like a pulled muscle or knot in my right glute. Also, deep inside the hamstring. It feels like I just need to stretch it. I bought a small cushion to try to force myself to sit on my butt and not on my tailbone, and any adjustment I make to the lumbar support in the car seat doesn't seem to help. I do try to move around while driving, and that helps a little bit.
That is a good call on his part, because it's definitely the spine. So the gluteal area, that's where the sciatic nerve starts, and then the back of the hamstring is the track it follows, and then the outer part of the calf means it's the L5 nerve root. So the solution would be to change positions before the symptoms start. So he mentioned sitting for an hour, so it would be trying to change every 30 minutes. And the way I do it personally, unless I'm late to the show and driving really fast, I put the lumbar rolled, so the pillow he has, it'd be more appropriate to put in the lumbar spine. And I also don't find that the seats that come with the lumbar supports fit my back, so I have an actual pillow. And so I will adjust the pillow, and then I will take it out, sit on one butt cheek, sit on the other butt cheek, and just kind of keep adjusting positions.
That's a problem. I mean, I have this too. If I drive over 3 hours, But mine, I mean, my daughter say, it's because you got a fat wallet, Dad. Take it out of your pants. And so I do that, but it still doesn't help.
No.
And what I found helps a little bit is putting the seat back quite a bit.
Great
and
call.
Pulling the wheel, the steering wheel forward so that you're not really reaching to get to the wheel.
Yes.
And that seems to help a little bit.
And that would be a great point. So you can adjust it back, adjust it straight up, adjust it in the middle, and just keep changing. So the spine likes about 30 to 45 minutes, and then it wants to change. And so if you can keep changing every 30 to 45 minutes, then you should mitigate some of the symptoms at least.
All right. There are a ton of emails here, and we'll get to them shortly. But let's go to Nancy in Plattsburgh, who's been waiting a while. 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy. Hello, Nancy in Plattsburgh. You're on.
Oh, thank you. So I've been in the hospital for almost 4 weeks, and I've been out for a week. And I fractured my pelvis, but just around the circular area on the right side, but it wasn't displaced. Mm-hmm. Didn't have any surgery, and spent most of the time on my back, but did some PT and some steps and walked the halls with a walker. But when I was released, the physician said, don't drive. Mm-hmm. And then he said, because of moving your foot, you know, from the brake to the accelerator. And so, but he didn't give me a time limit. And I was just wondering what time limit it should be. And I don't want to tell him, but I've been driving.
Ooh, ouch.
But I was wondering why.
Wait, now he said never to drive again, Nancy?
No, he just said don't drive.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So the general, a fractured pelvis in general takes anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. As we get older, it can take longer, so it could be 8 to 12 weeks. And the reason is exactly what he said. If you have discomfort or you have difficulty moving the leg because of the fracture, then the safety factor of getting your foot to the brake becomes an issue. The time frame for that is definitely depending on the individual. And so I'm not encouraging you to do more of that. It's more that when if you are driving, to be extra cautious and make sure that your leg is in fact working properly, because it is very dangerous. It's similar with hip replacements. And the general rule for that is 8 to 12 weeks after, sometimes 6 to 8 weeks. But it's a substantial time frame just to allow things to heal, to make sure you can react appropriately.
You're driving after 1 week, Nancy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, and well, I have a new vehicle. I used to have a pickup truck with a standard shift. You know, like for 40 years I've been doing that.
Yeah.
So I have a RAV4. It's very easy. It doesn't bother me to drive. Mm-hmm. I haven't had pain. I have to get used to when I get out and stand up and go slowly and try to practice the, heel first and raising my knees. And But I just thought it was very interesting. Don't drive.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason, just because
careful.
Of safety. Yeah.
All right, Nancy. Hey, thanks a lot for calling. Always great to hear from Plattsburgh. One more email here, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll do more phones and more emails and everything else with Matthew Goodemote. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Paul in Malta writes in, "My right elbow has been giving me some pain while lifting weights. Dumbbell curls and other pulling-type exercises have become unbearable. I've been icing it, taking ibuprofen. Anything else I can do other than stopping working out?"
It's a tricky question because it depends on where in the elbow. So we just had lateral epicondylitis. If you have pain on the inner part, that's called medial epicondylitis and known as golfer's elbow. And that is often related to the flexor muscles in the forearm. But there are times where the bicep tendon itself gets irritated, which would cause pain in the curls.
Right.
The good news is the same solution is isometrics and eccentrics. I'm not a fan of stopping activity, because especially until you identify what the actual source is, but doing some isometrics, it really eliminates the likelihood of injuring. And if you get some improvement with it in pain levels and function, then you can progress to the other weights.
Now, of course, there's the old joke. The guy goes to the doctor. Doctor, it hurts when I do this. The doctor says, don't do that.
Yeah.
Are you an outlier in your theory that, there's pain, but, keep going, buddy.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So we call active recovery now, because we've learned that the stop doing it method actually can lead to more problems and create new problems.
So, okay.
Yeah. There's, of course, times and place for that, but when it's a musculoskeletal injury, the majority of times it's okay to proceed.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Back in a flash. You say you want a revolution? They're sold live here on Vox Pop. 800, or maybe an insurrection. 800-348-2551 is the number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy. A couple more quick emails, and then we'll go to the phones. This one is from, oh my gosh, it's a long... Oh, I see. The disclaimer on the bottom is the thing that's long. The question's fairly brief. This is from Fran in the 413. "Someone in my family was just diagnosed with vertigo. They were told to go home and try a maneuver on the bed where they turn their head this way and that and roll over. Does it work? Is it safe? We reviewed a video from Johns Hopkins Medicine. Are there any videos you'd recommend to learn how to do this technique?" That would be the Epley maneuver.
That is correct,
yes.
Ray.
Ding, yes. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes. So vertigo is a problem of the inner ear. There's little crystals in our canals, and that can cause severe symptoms. Ironically, I was experiencing vertigo this weekend and still a little bit today, and I was doing the Epley, and that's exactly. So it definitely, there's videos online, but you can just, if you've already had one from Johns Hopkins, it's just as good.
And I tell you, it looks hilarious.
Yeah.
I had a middle ear infection, and then I had positional vertigo for quite a while afterwards, and I did the Epley.
Yeah.
My children found it hilarious, but
it
does work. It finally gets those crystals back into the spot.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Brian in Saratoga. Brian, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Matthew. Thank you for taking my call.
You got it.
Matthew, I'll just give you a brief history. Back in 96, when I was 25, I was in a motorcycle accident where I had to lay my bike down on my right knee. Flash forward to July 19th of this year, I had to lay a dirt bike down on didn't think it was as bad. And I should mention, I tore my meniscus back in 96. They wanted to do surgery.
Yeah.
I opted out. Pretty active. You know, it bothered me sometimes. But what happened in this past July, definitely in the area of where my meniscus is, pain, but actually then on the opposite side of my knee, mm-hmm. the outside of my knee. Initially, I mean, it was really bad. I couldn't lift my knee more than a couple inches. It was hard to drive. It's gradually gotten better. I just find that to extend my knee totally straight is where the discomfort comes, or when I bring my knee, if I wanted to bring my knee up as close to my butt,
yeah.
is when the pain. And my question is, I know when I went to physical therapy back in 96, I know the exercises for around the knee. I was just wondering what your thoughts were, if there's anything that's been in the work since then that you could recommend.
Well, first, the meniscus, depending on where the tear is, because there's different blood supplies depending on where the tear is. So the outer portion of meniscus has good blood supply. The inner portion does not. And there's different types of tears, a posterior horn tear and a bucket handle tear. Those are the kind that don't usually heal. And so the other one that you had most likely was one of the kinds that does.
hence
the improvement. My concern is that you can't extend the knee fully. And because I'm concerned, because it often means that there is a meniscus that's blocking your ability to move the knee into that motion. The bending part can be from swelling. So you can definitely get rid of the swelling by doing elevation, getting
Rice,
a knee sleeve.
They taught me the Rice years ago.
Yeah,
the
don't use Rice anymore, because the rest part is the part we don't like. It's the elevation.
Okay.
Ice doesn't do a whole heck of a lot at this point. You can if you like it. It's fine. But the compression and elevation, definitely keep doing. But really elevate, so your foot pointing towards the ceiling, elevation. And then the exercises, we focus a lot above and below the knee. So we would do hip exercises as well as calf exercises, in addition to the ones you did probably back in 96, which was mostly quad. And all of that is good. But if your knee's not getting straight and you've been going since July, my guess is that you need to get it looked at and see.
That was my next question is, like, at this point,
it should be,
because I'm not a big fan of doctors. Yeah. No offense to MD. I'm kind of a Luddite in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But at this point, at 3 months, I mean, like I said, I can sleep now. Like, initially, I couldn't lay on either side.
Yeah.
It's gradually getting better, but I'm pretty active. I know I've listened to you long enough that you're a big proponent of movement, and I'm pretty active at 54. I usually walk between 5 and 10 miles a day. I like to run sometimes.
Yeah.
One of the questions I want to ask is, am I doing damage by walking? I mean, I'm not walking as much as I used to, but I try to walk at least a couple miles a day.
Right.
Some discomfort, but it's not like severe pain. Is that, I know you're normally into movement.
Yes.
Yeah. Like work up to the pain, not through the pain.
Yeah, but it's depending. So that it's a bit of a trick question, because if there's a significant tear or a certain type of tear and you keep putting weight through it, it can in fact make the tear worse. So my concern is that at 3 months out and not being able to fully extend yet, that's the red flag for me.
Okay.
That's the one that warrants getting it looked at and getting an X-ray or MRI. Yeah.
All right.
Matthew, I really appreciate you. Yep. And Ray, thanks always for the tunes.
You got it, man. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Matthew Goodemo today. Physical therapy. Let's go to East Greenbush. Harlan. Harlan, you're on.
Yes, let me turn my phone down. I'm in my car.
Very kind.
So we go back to the woman talking about the hip surgery or whatever.
Public pressure.
And told not to drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got bilateral shoulder tears. I'm an orthopedic mess.
Mm-hmm.
I was told if you drive and you get in an accident and a doctor tells you not, you're liable.
Oh, yeah.
The insurance company could deny that claim.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Is that true?
Oh, I don't know insurances. sounds reasonable.
You know what? That's a valid point. That's very interesting. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it sounds like it probably is.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to save a buck. Yeah. Good point, man. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. All right, this email from, I hope I have this name properly, Anezka, or it could be Aniska. I'm an active 75-year-old. I recently developed a Baker's cyst. What can I do to minimize the cyst? What's a Baker's cyst?
So it's a cyst on the back of the knee. And it's just literally, it sounds exactly like it is. It has a fluid in it as a cyst. It's often the result of a meniscus tear, a cartilage tear, mm-hmm. or degenerative changes.
Right.
You can definitely get it drained with an orthopedic, and they often will inject cortisone as well into it to try to keep it away. But there are times where it will return, and there's not a great thing anything physical therapists do. We would try different things to improve the function of the leg, and sometimes that will help. I've treated a few in my day, and sometimes they go away, and sometimes they don't. Same thing with having the doctor remove the fluid from the cyst. It sometimes helps, and sometimes it'll just come back. I do think, depending on the function, though, if it's really big and it's painful and it's affecting function, it is worth going to the orthopedist and trying that, because it can be very effective.
All right, this is from Chris in Cornwall. Then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 if you have a question for Matthew Goodemote. Chris in Cornwall writes, I was recently diagnosed with moderate stenosis in my lower spine. Can physical therapy help? Are there any exercises I can try at home?
Yes, both to those. So stenosis is just a narrowing of the canals of the vertebrae.
Why does it happen?
Often degenerative changes.
Okay.
Some people it's congenital, but the majority of times it's because as we get older, our discs when we're young are like grapes, and as we get older, they shrivel up to be like raisins. Dehydrate and shrink.
All right.
And so the stenosis, the very important part right now, number one is stenosis is problematic with standing and problematic with walking. So if those are not the two things that are bothering this person, then it may not be stenosis that's causing the discomfort, because stenosis is often found on x-rays, but it doesn't match the clinical presentation. And I treated that regularly in the clinic. So it definitely is something physical therapy can help with. If it's stenosis, we do a lot of mobility work and strengthening. And we also can identify if it is in fact stenosis, or you just happen to have stenosis and it's contributing but not the cause of the condition.
So. All right. Well, that's good. Let's go back to the phones with Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. Bob is in Rotterdam. Hello, Bob. You're on.
You're from what?
Hello, Bob.
Oh, my daughter's moving down there.
Okay, Bob. He waited all that time. Bob, call back. But, you got to be ready for it, man. Otherwise, Portia's in Leverton. I know Portia's ready. Hello, you're on.
Hi. Yes, I'm ready. I am 83 years old, and I need encouragement to believe that I can overcome the following problem. I can stand up straight, but I can't walk at the same time. If I start to walk, I bend over. And I've had an MRI. I even had spine surgery, which got rid of some arthritis and so on. But I really would like to be able to walk around for at least a few more years without humped over. And I was wondering if you could tell me some exercises. I'm very good at exercises. I really do them. So is there hope?
Well, the fact that you can still get straight would suggest that there is, in fact, hope. So sometimes when people can't get all the way straight, it would be very difficult to get back straight. So as long as you
can get straight.
So there's a few things. One is to maintain that. So a simple backwards bend to keep the range of motion in the spine is very important. And then it would be strengthening exercises. And to be honest with you, Portia, the best way to do that would be with a visit to physical therapy, because...
Oh, no, I have an appointment. I signed up.
Yep.
I'm going to do it. I just want to see whether you could encourage me.
Yeah, for sure. So they're going to teach you different strengthening exercises for your back and your buttock muscles, which will help to keep the body up tall while walking. And in my clinic, I often used hiking sticks to help people also stay up tall. And I preferred hiking sticks over canes and things, because a hiking stick, you would get a more natural gait and you can stand up tall doing it. And so that could be something.
Yes, I have two ski poles.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So those are the type of things and if you have those would be important to bring so they can monitor you and watch you use them. And that's exactly what I would have you do, is to work on being tall in the clinic and making sure you're safe doing that. And then from there, you can practice that at home. I've had patients, Portia, who practice just down the hallway in their own home where it's safe to make sure that they build up their strength and tolerance so that they can walk outside.
Oh, good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm cheered up. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. You know what? You must be so pleased when you get a patient like Portia, who's not only willing to go and do the exercises, is gung-ho.
For sure. It's the best. Yep.
And that probably means there'll be some success.
Yeah, definitely. It's exactly right, Ray. I love having a patient that is wanting to get better and does what it takes to get better.
Love it.
Yeah.
Great. The email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. The number is 800-348-2551. And our guest is Matthew Goodemote. It's physical therapy. Joseph writes in, I'm 47. My job is very physical. I do a lot of lifting, crawling around, etc. For the past year, I've been dealing with knee pain. The pain radiates more on top of the knee, especially if I lift something heavy. Then it persists for months at a time. Then it goes away. Then it comes back. Any idea what's going on?
On the top of the knee, I assume still by the kneecap, and there's a tendon right there. And oftentimes, especially as we get older, even though he's not old and the physical type of work he's doing, it can just lead to irritation of that tendon. And tendons do incredibly well with strength exercises.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what it is. There's sometimes it could be the cartilage under the kneecap that's leading to the pain, but that usually wouldn't get better and come and go. So my guess is it's tendon, and tendons do very well with strength.
Okay.
Can you guess what kind, Ray?
The tendon itself?
Yeah, isometrics
and
negatives.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing is, it'll work, but will that keep coming back? In other words, if it goes away for months and then he gets it for months, you know, what's up?
So then as a PT, that's why we'd have regular routines, like weekly. So doing something as fun as wall sits. Do you know the Roman chair wall sits?
Oh, we've talked about the wall sits. Yeah, oh, for sure.
So doing wall sits and having that as part of a weekly routine can help mitigate that and keep the pain away.
All right,
so,
fair enough.
If it is tendon. Yeah.
Our guest today is Matthew Goodemote. It's physical therapy on the program. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's grab another call here before we take a break. And Sandy is in Massachusetts. Hello, Sandy. You're on.
Hi, Matthew. I have two replaced hips that I got in 06. And the doctor told me they'd last 10 to 15 years back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been almost 20. And but I can't take walks outside anymore because my right one starts hurting right away.
Yeah.
So my plan is just to do isometrics, and I lift weights, and I do floor stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't walk anymore because I don't want to have them replaced again. Do you think that's a good philosophy, and try to go as long as I can, or what?
Well, definitely try to go as long as you can. The new hip replacements, like within the last 5 years, are significantly better and last significantly longer.
Really?
Yeah. They're especially from that time.
Yeah,
frame.
I heard that too.
Yeah, they really are. But before that, the key is strength for sure. So you want to try to get the muscles around the joint as strong as possible. And unfortunately, doing floor exercise and things won't help walking. So you'd have to do things like squats and lunges and stuff like that. It's not that you shouldn't do floor exercises, because exercises like bridges and side planks and stuff are great exercises for the hips, but you need the weight bearing part of it. And so you would want to do things, step up, step downs, squats, lunges, things like that, to build the strength and to allow the hip to tolerate weight bearing. And if you've been trying that for like a 6 to 8 week period of time where you were doing religious exercise and it really wasn't helping at all, it would be worth to get the evaluation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're going to have surgery. It's just to go and see what's going on to make sure it is in fact coming from the hip joints themselves and not something else.
Yeah, I also have two replaced knees. I had breast cancer chemo, and it ate up my osteoarthritis, which ate up my joints.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with the squats, but I can do some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So So I will try that.
Yeah, and you can do modified squats, so you don't need to go low. It would be to the height of a chair, like you're sitting down and standing up and then just repeating that. And if that's too low, then you would just put blankets in the chair to boost yourself up. So those would be okay to do. And also, you don't have to do squats. You can do step downs and lunges and things. So it's just that usually if you prop it up, it's easier on the body. So
okay, Sandy, we got to take a
break. And then what about lying...
Go ahead.
On my side and then doing leg lifts.
Yeah, those are okay. They're just after a couple of weeks, they're probably not doing a whole heck of a lot other than maintaining what you have. And so to make gains, you have to progress. Yeah.
All right, Sandy, thanks for the call. We will take a break right now. It's Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. If you have a physical therapy question, voxpop@wamc.org is the email. We'll be back. Say, do you like cookbooks? Do you like to just look at them and talk about them?
Well, I'm with you. I love them, too. And we're doing a live event up in Saratoga next week, a week from Monday.
You can find out all the details. There are only about 50 availabilities if you want to go. There'll be some lunch. Pam Abrams, Annette Tomei are going to pick out the best of the cookbooks of the year, and we'll chat and we'll try some recipes from it. It should be fun. It's kind of a live on the road edition of Food Friday, and you can find out by going to WAMC.org and look for WAMC on the road. It's Vox Pop today, though, 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is here, and he drove very quickly, and you're probably going to have some speeding tickets. But thank you for being here. And this email from Bob: the surgeon who did my laminectomy to prevent sciatic pain, which was successful, told me there's no surgery for the lower back pain, which I continue to have. Any recommendations?
Did it say where he had the laminectomy?
What's a laminectomy?
Okay, so it's a surgery to the spine.
Okay.
And it just basically removes the lamina, which is where the nerve root exits. It's part of the bone.
All right.
And it just creates space there. So
he did not say where it was.
Yeah, so it's a very hard question because depending on where the laminectomy was, that removed the nerve pain. So I'm guessing he's thinking the same thing. So, okay, so the surgery for back pain, I think it's kind of a misnomer that people have, that if you have surgery, that back pain is definitely going away. That's not always the case. The reason to do a laminectomy specifically is because of the nerve, because you're trying to prevent loss of function in the leg. Back pain is very tricky because back pain is sometimes caused by the discs in the back or the vertebrae, but it can also be caused by muscles. Mm-hmm. So it would definitely warrant going to a physical therapist and or somebody who does manual therapy to see if you can get some relief with the muscles surrounding the lower spine.
All right. Another Bob, this one from Shelburne Falls, writes in: I observed a bump with some pain near my Achilles tendon, which I assume is bursitis. I walk up and down a mountain for an hour, and I also do an hour on the elliptical every day. When I saw the bump, I took 3 months off from the elliptical, but it never went away. So I've given up on healing it and gone back to my normal exercise. Is there any hope to improve the bursitis without stopping my exercise completely?
I'm not sure it's bursitis. So sometimes there's a thickening of the tendon right at the insertion point, and it has a name, Hagelin something deformity. They used to call it pump bump. So for women wearing pumps to work and stuff, those shoes, I think they're called pumps. And it just an irritation of the tendon, and it thickens in that area. So I would recommend doing strengthening for the Achilles muscles. So the walking and things are great, but doing some isolated movements to improve it would be worthwhile.
All right. Ken in Boston Lake asks, is a doctor's referral needed to get physical therapy?
It is not. In New York State, you have 30 days to see a physical therapist with no doctor's referral.
Yeah, right. And that's fine with all the insurance companies and everything else?
It should be, because it's been in practice for a long time. There are a couple exceptions to that, Ray. So I think but it's legal to do, yes. And you're right, with insurances, sometimes they are cranky without a doctor's referral. I don't remember the insurances, though. It could just be Medicare is the one that's still requiring it.
You know, I went to the phrenologist, and they would not take insurance.
Yeah.
Where they, they're reading the bumps on my head. It's kind of an old school. Deb says, please review
the... I was trying to think what that was, right?
For phrenology.
Heard the word before.
Hilarious. Yes. Oh, yeah. I can tell by the bumps on your head. You're an idiot. Deb says, please review the symptoms of gluteal
tendinopathy. Seems to be mostly a female issue. I have a hamstring tear, not enough for surgery, which rears its ugly head into my buttock and hip. Recently, I've lost a lot of problems with flex. Oh, I think I've had a lot of problems with flexibility in my hip and rotation. I remain active, but only about a quarter of what I did do. Any suggestion on what to request for therapy would be very appreciated. And that's from Deb.
So gluteal tendonitis, you have three gluteal muscles. You have your gluteus maximus, which is the big one. Then you have the gluteus medius and gluteus minimus, and they're underneath the gluteus maximus. And they radiate out to the outer part of your hip where people often get the bursitis, greater trochanteric bursitis, and they attach right there. So if the pain is by the bone on the outer part of your hip, that could, in fact, be gluteal tendonitis, and I've experienced lots of patients with that, and she's right. It is often more female than male, although I have seen men with it too. The solution for tendonitis, period, tendons love isometrics and love negative exercises, so there's a bunch of strengthening that can be done. There is other possibilities, depending on, because what some of her symptoms she described, I can't conclusively rule out the lower back.
Okay.
So I would want to do an evaluation to make sure it's not back pain that's referring into the glutes and down into the hamstring. And sometimes there are two things happening at the same time, and I just want to separate them out to make sure.
All right, one more email for now, and then we'll get back to the phones with Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. This one's from Sally. What would you tell a 23-year-old to do, a 23-year-old, wow, with problems, to do about lower back, hip, side glute, and quad pain brought upon by sitting? I'm in little to no pain when I don't sit. I'm in pain only when I sit for a while and a bit after I get up from sitting. Went to a primary doc for it because it has been 3 weeks now. They said it was muscle related, more than likely the psoas muscle in the back. They also mentioned the piriformis. The doctor told me to take it easy, keep stretching because it has gotten better, but you're shaking your head already.
Don't stretch.
I'm not done,
yes,
but I'm still experiencing pain to a lesser degree when I sit in those areas I mentioned before.
Yes.
There are times when I sit now when I'm not in pain.
Yes.
They also did not mention physical therapy to me.
Yeah.
Any tips?
So I had said just a minute ago that the gentleman with the email with the back pain had the laminectomy, that manual therapy is a good way to go. And I forgot to mention strengthening because that's how you resolve back pain. So the first, I can't believe physical therapy wasn't recommended. It's definitely something should to be pursued. And sitting can be posture related, like we were talking about just a minute ago with the cars and having lumbar support in there and adjusting your postures. And I shake my head about stretching those muscles because if it's coming from the lumbar spine, then you want to go after the lumbar spine. And stretching those muscles is fine to do. It's safe and all that, but it's just not getting to the source of it. And if you don't address the source, then you won't have the resolution of the symptoms. So the first thing is to go directly after the spine and find out what movements are lacking, if there are movements lacking, and do specific stretches for the lower back on a regular basis, meaning every single day before work, during work, after work, to get out in front of this so the pain levels are controlled and minimal at best. And then typically manual therapy is very good to help with the psoas and the glutes just to calm them down, but the strengthening is the long-term solution.
Okay. Very quickly, before we go to Rafi and Poughkeepsie, Aaron wrote in, can you just explain very briefly what is an isometric exercise?
Isometric just means your joint doesn't move, so you're contracting the muscle, and you can contract it as hard as you possibly want. You can do it against resistance, but the joint itself does not move.
Okay, let's go to Rafi and Poughkeepsie. Rafi, you're up.
Hello there, thank you.
You bet.
I like your show.
Thanks.
I just have a question. I've been running. I run a marathon every year, and it usually takes me about 3 weeks to recover. To recover, to run another, say, like a half.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, like, reduce that recovery time to, like, say, a week. Mm. Is there any methods? Like ice or compression, or what's your advice on reducing, if there's such a thing as that? I mean, I know I listen to my body.
Yeah.
And what have you, but I just want to sign up for, like, a week.
Yep, Rafi, the single greatest recovery tool is sleep. So making sure you're getting adequate rest before a marathon, after marathon. But as far as what you can do, light activity and compression for sure. So compression, if you can go online and find a whole bodysuit compression, that keeps the blood flow going, helps muscles recover fast. It helps muscles recover. I'll just say that. It's not necessarily
more
fast.
More quickly?
Yeah.
Less slowly?
And, yeah. And ice is also okay immediately after, but after the first 24 hours, it's not going to probably do a whole heck of a lot. General light activity is recommended. Obviously, the good nutrition, good hydration, things like that as well. But sleep is more and more needed for before and after to help the body recover. It's when we recover. So, and compression, the Australians are doing a ton of that with their Olympians. So after workouts, before and after big events, they have them in full body suit compressions, and or they go into the pool because the pool has compressive forces. So those would all be the quickest way, I know.
All right. Rafi.
And how long? Yeah. And how long is that? Do you do?
I
you said cold 24. Yeah. 24 hours. But how about
yeah, because you're essentially like every day? You're trying to minimize the stress reaction from the marathon, and that's within the first 24 hours afterwards. So, and again, there's lots of controversy about that too. But compression is good. Manual therapy is another one just popped in my head. So getting a good massage can help move the metabolites that built up from the marathon and flush it out of your system. Those would all be good.
Okay.
So that compression is after 2-3 days after, or is it just
you can use compression before? No. Compression can be used all the way to the day of the event and immediately after the event.
All right, beautiful. And then the cold is just the first 24 hours.
Yeah, because you're trying to minimize the reaction from the marathon.
Okay.
And that has a limited
time
frame.
And how about like stretching and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's okay. I don't think it speeds the process up. It's blood flow that speeds up the recovery, and so the compression helps to minimize the swelling and blood flow. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Rafi, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much.
You got it, man. Appreciate it. So there's such a thing as a full body compression? So it sounds like a medieval torture. What the heck?
I only have seen them, right? And they just look like the suits you'd wear for swimming, like the neoprene body suits.
Can you adjust the compression?
Well, it's built, I think it's 15 to 25 milligrams of pressure. I think it's something like that.
Does it include your head? Do you have a hood that you can put on?
No, but they do have the compression, like Normatec is a brand where they have the big compression sleeves they put over you, and they use actual mechanical air, pneumatic, to squeeze all the fluid out.
So you've never seen anyone actually do this?
I've seen it online. The Normatec I had at my clinic, and you have one for your arms, back, and legs, so you could do almost a full body.
You know, with Good Emote Sports and Performance, you work with a lot of students, right?
I do.
You could scare the bejesus out of them. All right, get in this thing. You'll be fine. Cecily and Rhinebeck, you're on. Hello? Cecily? Hello? Hello? Goodbye. Let's go to Ken in Pittsfield. Ken, you're on.
Hello there.
You're on. Go.
Hey, hi there. Hey, I'm getting a hip replacement next month, so I'm not excited about it, but I'm really looking forward to feeling better. And I heard your previous caller talk about her problems with her hip replacements, but apparently that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm looking for advice because I've been doing Pilates 3 times a week for like 7 weeks now for pre-op preparation, losing weight and all that. I want to know, can I have some solid advice as the best way to get through this? Because I know I'll be better when I come out on the other side, but I know this is not going to be much fun when it first happens. So can you tell me what I need to expect about recovering from hip surgery?
Do you know if you're having a posterior or anterior procedure?
Posterior.
Okay. So the difference is the recovery immediately after. In both cases, the recovery is pretty fast. And so that's the good news. Hip replacements have gone a very long ways, and recovery for most people is not what it used to be 20 years ago, for sure. So the posterior procedure means they're going to cut through some gluteal muscles. And so leading up to that, doing some exercises to keep those muscles as healthy as possible. There's exercises like bridges and things called clamshells, and you can just Google those, and they'll show you different pictures and how to do that. And those would be good to leading up to the procedure. Afterwards, there's certain limitations. You're not going to be able to cross your leg, for example, and you're not going to be able to bring your knee to your chest for a certain period of time to allow the hip replacement to heal. And you should follow those rules very strictly. Everything else is fair game.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, I had my pre-op meeting with doctors and physical therapists yesterday. Perfect. And they did mention that about, you don't want to move this way. You don't want to cross that way.
Yes.
So,
and follow that, because that can lead to complications. And if you follow those rules, you won't have those complications and things will go pretty smoothly.
Hey, man, good luck with that. Thank you. 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemot is here. Let's go to Clifton Park. Chris, you're on, Chris. Go.
Hi.
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 Hi. I'm also having a hip replacement. I've received one diagnosis, and I'm going for a second opinion. I'm kind of amazed that it presented as quickly as it did.
Yeah.
Am I incorrect in thinking that I should be able to last longer? I'm only in my mind, at a level 4 or 5 in pain. Mm-hmm. Should I wait longer?
It's very difficult to say. So sometimes the degenerative changes are so extreme that that's why they're encouraging you to do the surgery. Pain levels are not the only variable for that. So it also depends on the function of the leg, how much range of motion you have, how much strength, and how much it's inhibiting your day. That being said, most orthopedics do suggest that you wait until you're ready, and that could, you know, could be next month, it could be a year from now. That's all depending on how you play the game from here out. And there's things you can try for sure, like physical therapy and exercise and getting it stronger to see if you can postpone that. But again, there are specific reasons why the surgeon's recommending it, and in some cases, it's not just the pain levels. It's because of how degenerated and how the function has deteriorated.
Last year I walked 50 rounds of golf and I skied 50 days.
Yep.
And I was just amazed that just out of nowhere it presented.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should it present that easily?
It can, for sure. And part of the reason why it could have just came out of the blue is because you had been so active and had kept it healthy, or at least relatively functioning. And then, it can just tip over that next level, and then there's the pain and there's the difficulty with function.
Well, Chris, good luck. Thanks for the call. Now, remember, we tried Cicely and Rhinebeck, and she was nowhere to be found. Hello, Cicely, you're on.
Hi. I had a torn tibial tendon probably 30 or 40 years ago, and I've always had very many problems with my feet, with my ankles. Just returned from a trip where I did much more walking than I would normally do.
Yeah.
And it was, painful, and I was in a group and I had to keep up.
Yep.
So last night when I had just gotten back, and I was on the plane for 8 hours, so that's part of it, I think. I had cramps in my feet that I've never had before, really, really painful cramps. Yep. And I wondered how I can avoid that. Okay.
We only have about a minute here, so have at it there, Matthew.
So the key with cramps is actually strengthening the foot muscles themselves and the calf muscles. And the best way to go about doing that, one simple exercise for that would be simply standing on one foot and starting the process of getting the foot stronger, and then progressing to do more complicated exercises like calf walking and toe walking and things. There's also in PT, we'd have people take a towel on a linoleum or hardwood floor or tile floor and use their toes to curl it up. And that just works they're called intrinsic, the actual muscles inside the foot itself. So the key to this is to get strength, and strength will help to minimize the cramping and eliminate some of the discomfort.
What can I do right in the middle of the night when they come?
Yeah, so the middle of the night, I would teach in the clinic manual techniques. So before the middle of the night, I always said fix the day and the night will fix itself. So you would do things like, in this case, doing a little light stretching before bed, doing some massage to the foot, putting some feet in a hot tub, things like that to get blood flow.
All right, we got to go, Cicely. Thanks for the call. You know, CoQ10 and proper hydration cured my cramps, my foot cramps.
Yeah,
it really worked.
Yeah.
All right, listen, man, this was fun. Matthew Goodemot, how do people find out more about your deal?
I guess just online, Goodemote SP. So my last name, SP.com, and I have my phone number and everything on there to get in touch with me.
And actually, there's a link from our page today, WAMC.org. Yes. I just remembered. Hey, man, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, Rick.
Support comes from Hudson Valley House Parts, Newburgh, an architectural salvage store sourcing large-scale architectural antiques and vintage components for use by preservationists, architects, designers, and homeowners. Hudson Valley... Can't say the word house. Let's try it again. Take two. Hudson Valley House Parts on Instagram. Really, English is not even my second language at this point. I speak Martian. Also, Handmade and More, New Paltz, specializing in women's clothing, handmade crafts, jewelry, toys, and gifts in the heart of downtown New Paltz for 50 years. Handmade and More.com. I don't know what's going on. All right. Hey, thanks again to Matthew Goodemote for being here. I think it might be happy nappy time for the host. Thanks to our engineer, Riley Phillips, Andrea Leong, screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Astronomy with Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson.